Tick-tock, 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 Radio-Attack. Eine andere Welt ist möglich.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Radio-Attack, Folge 1106. Heute mit mir, dem Matthias. Und heute geht es ums Thema Energie, speziell um grüner Wasserstoff und ob und wie der bei einer Energiewende hilfreich sein kann. ATTAC fordert ja schon seit langem eine demokratische Energieversorgung und zwar mit weniger Spekulation und Profitmaximierung, sondern vor allem fokussiert auf Versorgungssicherheit, Leistbarkeit und Klimagerechtigkeit, damit es leistbare und nachhaltige Energie für alle geben kann. Und dazu werden wir uns heute einen Ausschnitt aus einem Webinar zum Thema grüner Wasserstoff anhören. Dort reden einige Attackis und Experten darüber, was grüner Wasserstoff ist, was es bedeutet und ob und wie er zur Energiewende eingesetzt werden kann und wie es tatsächlich real eingesetzt wird. Grüner Wasserstoff wird ja oft als einfache Lösung für die Energiekrise dargestellt, da sich mit Ökostrom Elektrolyse betreiben lässt und der Wasserstoff dadurch ohne Emissionen erzeugt werden kann. Und dieser Wasserstoff ist dann als Energieträger und Energiespeicher vielseitig einsetzbar. Und wir hören uns jetzt das erste Mal unsere ATTAC-Kollegin Emma Schrade an, die uns eine kleine Einführung zu dem Thema gibt, speziell dazu, wie es politisch in der EU derzeit zum grünen Wasserstoff aussieht. Das Webinar und die Gespräche der Vortragenden sind auf Englisch.
So as you might know, in the last few years, hydrogen was being hailed as a cornerstone of a green energy transition and especially within the EU context and along its climate goals and green transition plans, such as the European Green Deal, hydrogen has been pushed since 2020. And the hydrogen strategy of the European Union was published in this year. It was embedded in post-COVID recovery plans, such as Next Generation EU. And it was seen as a major element to decarbonize the European economy and also European industries. In 2022, the hydrogen targets have been massively extended and exacerbated as a consequence of the Russian aggression war on Ukraine and the need for the EU to become more independent of Russian gas and fossil energy sources. So key words that popped up in order to legitimize this expansion of domestic hydrogen on the one hand and massive imports on the other hand were keywords like energy security, diversification, and strategic autonomy. But it was not just the political circumstances and dynamics that led to this hydrogen hype. On the European level, several studies from Corporate Europe Observatory, for example, demonstrate that hydrogen has been pushed enormously by the fossil and gas lobby, which had masked itself as hydrogen lobby on a European level. And their lobby activities are massive. Alone in 2023, they had invested more than 75 million euros in lobbying activities, which is a lot compared to lobbying activities for big tech, for example. And it is obvious that these fossil companies push hydrogen with the goal to prolong their business models and to repurpose their assets, such as pipelines. So their interests are threatened by climate goals. So their strategy consists in establishing hydrogen as a green gas replacing fossil energies. Again and again, this hydrogen lobby also advocated for blue hydrogen. So blue hydrogen is produced using the same reforming process that is used to create gray hydrogen, but the CO2 released in this process should be captured in storage with so-called CCS technologies, whereas green hydrogen is produced from renewable energies without any CO2 emissions released within the process. So although the European hydrogen targets focus mainly on green hydrogen, The hydrogen lobby's activities have been so successful that certain loopholes and subsidies for this blue hydrogen, which is damaging the climate very much, that certain loopholes and subsidies for this form of or type of hydrogen has been created in the European regulation. However, this hydrogen hype has also been criticized by a lot of social movements and critical voices. Also, in July last year, the European Court of Auditors, Europäischer Rechnungshof, for all the German-speaking guests today, published a report calling the European hydrogen targets unrealistic. And yeah, they criticized also the lack of solid analysis for the import and production of hydrogen. Also, critical voices from social movements and organizations are becoming louder as the European perpetuate neo-colonial power relations, as most of the hydrogen that will be imported should be produced in regions and countries in the so-called global south. So as you might know, the production of green hydrogen is very energy and water intense and still very costly. So a lot of critical voices warn that the externalization of the hydrogen production, which is happening through the European hydrogen targets, could lead to massive social conflicts, energy poverty, land grabbing, because a lot of land is needed to install the renewable energies that is needed to produce green hydrogen, and also water scarcity. And mostly indigenous and local communities will be affected. And this is already happening. There are already taking place struggles in Morocco and South Africa, for example, on land issues and energy. So from an ecologically and socially just perspective, we must ask today in this webinar, what are the costs, the social and ecological costs of this rollout of a massive hydrogen production, not only here in Austria, but more importantly, also in those countries where the hydrogen should be imported from? And there are also several warnings against fossil lock-in effects through the repurpose of fossil infrastructure. So secondly, we must also ask who profits from this hydrogen economy and how could a socially and ecologically just hydrogen future look like? And last but not least, it's unclear at the moment also how far or to which extent this hydrogen future is really going to be realized. Because yes, we have huge infrastructure projects such as the hydrogen backbone that is in the making at the moment. However, yeah, this huge rollout of a hydrogen economy stagnates.
Ja, das war eine kurze Einführung in den grünen Wasserstoff, wie es damit in der EU aussieht und wie die Abläufe derzeit im wirtschaftlichen Zusammenhang stehen. Als nächstes wird uns Jakob Rammer noch mehr über die Situation zum grünen Wasserstoff in Österreich erklären und auch noch ein bisschen erweitert zu der EU.
So I will present the current hydrogen developments and transformative possibilities in Austria and beyond. And yeah, just to briefly give you an overview of the content of my presentation, I will first cover hydrogen developments in Austria with a strong focus on international dimension and implications for social ecological justice. And then in the second part, I will focus on transformative possibilities that go beyond the transition from one energy source to another, but also challenge global socioeconomic structures and power relations towards more justice-based approaches. So starting off with the Austrian strategy, on the demand side, it prioritizes the use of hydrogen for decarbonizing key industrial sectors like steel production, chemical industry, cement production, and to a lesser extent also for mobility and other sectors. On the supply side, it plans to produce hydrogen in 2030, at least like have 1 gigawatt of production capacities installed, which would cover about 80% of the current demand, which is 5 terawatt hours annually. But at 2040, the hydrogen strategy assumes that we have a demand of 67 to 75 terawatt hours per annum. This would be a massive increase, a 14 times increase from the current consumption in 15 years. So this is, of course, to a certain extent due to the new hydrogen applications, for example, in steel production, in the chemical industry. But also, researchers from Greenpeace have pointed out that there are obviously no significant measures for demand reduction or efficiency increases in energy use in general. The renewable energy that would be needed for such amounts would cover about half of the total land area of the Austrian state of Burgenland, just to give you an idea of what this means. And this is actually where the imports come in, as Elena already said, externalizing the costs to mostly global south. But staying in Austria for a while now, for the transport, Austrian plan is that there's like a pipeline grid planned, also really connected to Snam actually, to the Italian grid. Here you can see in the picture like the Austrian grid with the blue, dark blue lines being the 1,200 kilometers of repurposed gas pipelines, and the light blue lines would be the new lines that would be built for hydrogen transport. And then, for the development and the implementation of the strategy, the climate ministry has set up the Hydrogen Partnership Austria. And this hydrogen partnership has an advisory board, which is dominated almost exclusively by CEOs of key private actors, businesses that I will cover in the next slide. And there is clearly a lack of high-level involvement or any involvement at all of civil society organizations or labor unions or critical academics. So there are only few scientists that are involved, and they more or less just cover technological or economic perspectives. There are, for example, no social scientists involved. Moving on to the key actors and the conflicting interests that shape the Austrian like emerging hydrogen economy, we have this like as pushers, I would say, the in private actors first and foremost. We have demanding industries like steel production, like the first, for example, or chemical refineries like OMV, also transport. Like aviation, Austrian Airlines. And on the other side of the value chain, we have also producers of technologies for hydrogen production, like Andritz, that wants to export electrolyzers. And then we also have energy companies and gas grid operators like Verbund, Gas Connect Austria. Apart from these private sector interests, we also have labor organizations like the Labor Union Federation and civil society actors like ATTAC. And then we have like a couple of main conflicting interests. It's really hard to boil down, and I don't want to go into that in too much detail, but there is this debate also in Austria of green versus blue hydrogen. But besides that, there is, I think, a broader conflict that is between a market-based and really green growth-oriented approach, a just transition approach, and then a more radical approaches that would actually lead to a fundamental social ecological transformation. And the green growth approach is by far currently the dominant approach, and it is represented in the current strategy, and it is the approach that is favored by private actors. It includes broad hydrogen application in the future. It includes private financing, but with a lot of public de-risking, as we have already heard, like a lot of public subsidies. And all in all, a strong role for private actors in the development of this hydrogen economy, which leads to limited public oversight, obviously. Then, like another approach, I would say, is a just transition approach, which is kind of championed by labor unions with some support by other organizations. And this is not a concrete set of demands, but I would say they favor a targeted hydrogen use, more state level planning, for example, through binding regulation for giving out subsidies. And they also pay more attention to the implications for workers, for example. And then we have more radical and transformative approaches, usually championed by civil society organizations. And I would really name the initiative for the democratization of energy provision systems. That is an initiative that actually is made and put forward by ATTAC. There are also other initiatives that call for global justice, for example. And the general idea is to move away from profit interests to a focus on public needs and common good. Moving on to the international dimension, because as we have heard, like if the current strategy is followed, Austria will depend about on like 70% of its hydrogen demand on imports. And this would largely come from the global south, especially Northern Africa, and in particular from Tunisia, as we have already heard from Elena. But there is there are several social ecological risks. For a more detailed analysis, I would recommend you to look into a study by Müller et al. I've also put it in the sources part. But the study has looked into like the main social ecological risk areas. There are four key areas that relate to the use and access to land, water and energy, as well as background injustices, such, for example, a race to the bottom in terms of labor standards. The government, the Austrian government, has commissioned an import study looking into anything else, basically, but none of those risks. So they have focused on questions of costs and logistics, but really disregard or not adequately assess the risks for local communities, for example. This import study also looks into the case of Chile, which is actually the case that I've studied in more detail and where I've researched last September. And the Chilean hydrogen strategy also tries to or aims to exploit a strong renewable energy production potential. Here in the picture, you can see on the strong winds in Magallanes bending the trees. There are constant winds. They are actually sometimes growing that direction. So the Chilean strategy focuses on also a green growth, is also a green growth based strategy. It includes large scale export oriented projects. And for those, it aims to attract private investors, usually foreign investors, also an Austrian investor is investing there. And it aims to attract those with public de-risking schemes. And it has actually taken up $1 billion loan from international donors, which, if this industry does not develop, would need to pay back with probably with interest. So there is kind of also a debt trap in addition to all of this. And furthermore, the Chilean policy process for the hydrogen policy is really influenced by international actors, most notably the German Agency for International Cooperation. And the actual project developments are also dominated by foreign actors, foreign investors, and energy multinationals. And usually the argument is, we will create economic benefits, but those are really quite limited. There will not be a lot of jobs created. There is limited potential for linkages and economic upgrading. And rather, the risk for developing enclave economies and deepening dependencies and unequal exchange. So despite the really limited benefits, local communities will have to bear the social ecological costs, such as massive territorial occupation, threats to biodiversity, social well-being, and a further marginalization of indigenous communities in the area. Just to give you an idea about the territorial occupation, here on the left, you can see a map of all the announced hydrogen projects in Magallanes in the southern region, with the red and orange parts showing the most advanced projects. And the picture on the right shows a map of the same region in the same scale, but with the country of Slovenia on top. So this is just to give you an idea of how massive this scale is. This is, incredibly massive. So concluding this part, there are some key issues with hydrogen development that we have heard now a couple of times. The current developments along the green growth paradigm is strongly influenced by the interests of private capital, and yet the actual development doesn't really happen. It happens really slowly because there is not a lot of rentability in this sector, and there are a lot of uncertainties in market development. But governments are kind of trying to work around that by through public subsidies or infrastructure investments in gas grids. Basically, what they are doing is using public money to offer benefits to private actors. Also, currently the dominant strategies usually do not provide for demand reduction, such as in the Austrian case, despite several possibilities, which I will cover in the next part. Furthermore, for hydrogen imports, the social ecological risks have not been adequately assessed. So along these lines, we see several injustices, such as the distribution of costs and benefits at the cost of local communities to the benefit of corporate actors in the global north, or the lack of civil society involvement, or the externalization of social and ecological implications. So let's leave that part and look towards more transformative possibilities and alternatives in Austria and beyond. Starting with a systems-wide perspective, I think it's really important to start with degrowth. Degrowth and demand reduction is mandatory in the global north, and we have actually a lot of possibilities. For example, steel and iron production, where we have just in this sector alone is expected to make up 40% to 50% of hydrogen demand in Austria. Austrian steel is strongly entangled with the supply industry of the automotive sector, most notably in Germany, which, as we know, is not only also a threat of contributing to climate change, but also struggling like a lot right now. Switching our mobility systems to public transport would, on the one hand, it would allow us to maintain the existing jobs and production capacities for the moment, like for the while that we need to ramp up public transport. And then we can degrow these industries in a socially equitable way and thereby contribute to an overall reduction in resource use and hydrogen demand, especially in the long term. Another field is construction. We can move towards alternative methods without or with less steel, or that would also reduce the demand for cement, for example. This is the HoHo project that you can see here. It's a project in Vienna, which uses predominantly wood and thereby strongly reduces steel and cement consumption. Then we also have the chemical industry. Here we have two striking examples, which actually make up more than three quarters of the current hydrogen demand in the European Union. First are the oil refineries. They currently make up 57%. So we actually need the hydrogen, or on what current hydrogen demand estimates are based on the current demand, is for oil refineries for creating gasoline. We want to phase that out anyways, and the sooner the better. And using hydrogen for refineries. Then the other option would be green hydrogen-based ammonia, which is used for fertilizer, or should be used for fertilizer production. Here we can reduce demand by switching to more towards organic farming, for example. And those and then finally, we also have transport, where we can we don't need to have substitute current demand with hydrogen, but we can reduce overall demand for shipping, for aviation. Just in shipping, by cutting all oil and gas shipments, we could reduce global shipping by up to 50%. So those are a lot of options, and the current demand is just completely overstated, and we first should look into, as Elena has said, options for demand reduction. But another interesting and transformative approach is the adoption of hydrogen in small scale and decentralized energy systems. Here, it's important to acknowledge the importance of technological path dependencies. So therefore, we should start early with a technological optimization of small scale systems for hydrogen production, storage, and reconversion. So for example, we could optimize small scale electrolyzer units for a maximum output during really small windows of time, where there is an oversupply of renewable energy. Let's say we have a really, really sunny day, we have a lot of solar radiation, there's an oversupply, which means the energy created is not used. This could be used to power a hydrogen generator. The hydrogen could be stored in tanks, and then when we have longer periods of undersupply because of winter or rainy seasons, the hydrogen could be reconverted into electricity. So we've coupled that with batteries for short-term balancing. You could use hydrogen to stabilize decentralized grids, which would be a huge boost to energy communities and in turn also increase energy sovereignty and contribute to the democratization of energy provision and use. So communities can actually decide for themselves how to use and be more efficient with their energy. Further use cases could be, you know, backups for off-grid or remote communities instead of diesel generators when there is a power shortage, outage. Or it could be used as a fuel for farming machinery, which is quite fuel intensive as well. And yeah, in addition to democratization, which is, I think, a goal in itself, such an approach would also reduce the local impacts and contribute to increased energy efficiency. And this is an example of such a project. It is a project of in Ghana, which aims to offer an alternative to this fossil-based backups, like diesel generators. And it tries also to do some technological optimization. And what's interesting, it also aims to not exploit this, but cooperate with local companies and possibly in the future manufacture such systems in Ghana, which kind of leads us to the next slide, using hydrogen for green and just industrialization in Global South. So what does this mean? This is quite broad point, but while degrowth is mandatory for specific sectors in the global north, industrial development in the global south is also necessary to provide for good living standards in these countries. So at the same time, we need to take into account the growing emissions, the growing resource use. So these industries will need to be planned efficiently and used strategically only like for basic for the common needs and basic needs, and not for creating profit or growth in any ways. But you know, this could provide energy access, mobility, health, food, housing, etc. So hydrogen would not be important for all of those use cases. Actually, the applications are quite limited, but it can contribute to such transformations. But yeah, obviously this means that hydrogen production in the global south should prioritize internal and regional demand over international trade, which in turn would also reduce energy losses from transporting hydrogen. It would reduce the overall intensity of global logistics because less goods are produced, needs to be shipped through international value chains.
Ja, danke also an den Jakob Rammer für seinen Vortrag zum Thema grüner Wasserstoff. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet einiges zum Thema lernen können. Das gesamte Webinar gibt es zum Nachsehen auf dem ATTAC Österreich YouTube-Kanal sowie auf www.attac.at. Dort gibt es auch eine Fülle von Informationen zu unserer Energiekampagne sowie unserer Forderung, die Energieversorgung zu demokratisieren, die eben auch von Organisationen wie dem ÖGB, System Change Not Climate Change, Degrowth Vienna oder Fridays for Future mitgetragen wird. Es wird auch noch ein weiteres Webinar zu diesem Thema geben, aus dem wir uns in der nächsten Folge Auszüge anhören werden. Für diese Folge sind wir jetzt schon am Ende angelangt. Ich hoffe, euch hat es gefallen und wir hören uns auch in der nächsten Folge wieder. Feedback wie immer gerne an radio@attac.at und immer dran denken, eine andere Welt ist möglich.
Radio Attac gibt es auch im Internet unter www.radioattac.at.